As this month marks the 70th anniversary of the Montgomery bus boycott, the new book Plundered, How Racist Policies Undermine Black Homeownership in America, challenges us to address the economic plunder still shaping black home ownership today. Plundered by Harvard and Yale-trained property law scholar Bernadette Atuahene is a fresh and revealing look at how economic and racial exploitation have been sewn into the fabric of our laws, inviting complicity from well-meaning people while eviscerating communities and widening the racial wealth gap. At the heart of the book are the stories of two Detroit families, one black, the other white, who, despite landing similar opportunities working for Ford Motor Company at the turn of the century, have diverged, with racist policies pushing the black family to property tax foreclosure while the white family has flourished. Yet this practice is no way limited to the city of Detroit. Atuahene tells us how we can get here and maps the continued impact of historic policies and practices. Again, the name of the book is Plundered, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Bernadette Atuahene to our program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me on, Joe. I appreciate it.
So what brought you down this path to look at specifically black home ownership in America, and with that, the racist policies that go along with it?
Yeah, so all my work deals with land and other property stolen from black people. I do ethnography, which means I live and immerse myself in the place I study. My first ethnographic project was in South Africa, looking at land and property stolen during colonialism and apartheid. And I, my first book, We Want What's Ours, really tried to understand the political, economic, social, psychological impact of getting land or money back through South Africa's land restitution program. That project was wildly successful. At the book launch in Johannesburg, the Deputy Land Claims Commissioner attended and announced that the commission planned to implement 90% of the book's recommendations. So although that book was wildly successful, it was really uncomfortable for me in many ways because it looked at black people as victims being stolen from. So for my next ethnographic project, I wanted to look at squatting, which is when vulnerable populations are taking property instead of being taken from. And in America, the last big urban squatting phenomenon was on the Lower East Side of Detroit, of New York. But what's currently happening in Detroit far outpaces anything that happened on the Lower East Side. So I won a big National Science Foundation grant to study squatting in Detroit. And under the law, there are two kinds of squatters, takeovers and holdovers. A takeover is someone who comes onto a property with no prior legal relationship to that property, what normal people would think of as a squatter. But there's also a category that I teach my first year property students called holdovers, which is someone who had a legal relationship to the property and fell out of it. So when I was interviewing both for my holdovers, one person after the next said that they were the owner and they got tax foreclosed and stayed waiting for the new owner to arrive. At that point, as a property scholar, I knew quite a bit about mortgage foreclosure when the bank takes your home for failure to pay the mortgage, but I knew very little about property tax foreclosure, which is when the local government takes your property for failure to pay property taxes. And so I did a study that found between 2009 and 2015, in each of those 7 years, anywhere between 53% and 84% of the properties the city of Detroit was assessing in violation of the Michigan State Constitution, which quite clearly says no property can be assessed at more than 50% of its market value. And it turns out that the lowest valued homes were the ones that were being most severely overassessed. And as a result, since 2009 in Detroit, one in three properties has been assessed in violation of the Michigan State Constitution. One in three. We haven't seen this number of property tax foreclosures in American history since the Great Depression. So then I called up the National Science Foundation. I was like, look, I'm supposed to be studying squatting. I found this other thing. I need your blessing to make the change. I made the change. And so I've been studying the property tax foreclosure crisis in Detroit ever since.
And you've been studying this in Detroit, but this is a policy that is widespread across this country, correct?
Without a doubt. So it's important to understand Detroit as ground zero for a national problem. Two of my colleagues, Carlos Avanacio León and True Power, have done a national study that finds that Blacks and Hispanics, on average, pay a 10 to 13% higher property tax rate than whites for the same bundle of goods, which equals, on average, $300 to $400 more per year. So racialized property tax administration is a racial justice issue that our nation has not yet begun to deal with. And in my book, Plundered, How Racist Policies Undermine Black Homeownership in America, Racialized Property Tax Administration as the latest chapter in a longer history of racist policies, which are policies, procedures, laws that produce or sustain racial inequity, right? It starts with race. As soon as Black people started getting to urban cities in large numbers through the Great Migration, we had racially restrictive covenants, redlining, renewal, blockbusting, more recently predatory mortgage lending. And so we have these layers and layers of racist policies. And again, it's best to understand this more recent national phenomenon, again, racialized property tax administration, as the latest chapter in a long history of racist policies that are, again, undermining Black homeownership in America.
In the book, you, as I mentioned in the introduction, you examine the consequences of housing policies through the lens of two families, one Black and one white. Give us a sense in somewhat of a generalization, but give us a sense of why those outcomes are so different.
Yeah. So the two families I have, it's so interesting. So it's one thing to tell you something and it's another thing to show. And that's what I'm doing in my book, Plundered, How Racist Policies Undermine Black Homeownership in America, is showing you how two men with very similar starting points had dramatically different endpoints. So Grandpa Bucci is Italian, and he was an Italian sharecropper in a system called Mezzadria in Italy. And Grandpa Brown was a sharecropper, Black, in North Carolina. And both men arrived in Detroit around the same time, early 1900s, 1903, 1905, to work at the very same factory, Ford's River Rouge factory. And the book goes through and shows you that, you know, Grandpa Bucci never had an easy life. He, in fact, only had four fingers because his thumb got sliced off in a work accident in France, where he worked in the coal mines before making it to Detroit. And Grandpa Bucci was Italian before Italians became white, and so experienced a great deal of discrimination based on his heritage. But at no point did Grandpa Bucci have to deal with racial covenants, which are covenants tucked in deeds, which prevented African Americans from living in the best places in the city, but more importantly, from living in the suburb where the houses were cheaper, bigger, with better amenities. Grandpa Bucci never had an easy life, but at no point did he have to deal with redlining, where the federal government drew a red line around the community, saying it was a credit risk, preventing valuable investment from entering the community, like home repair loans, business loans, mortgages. Grandpa Bucci had a hard life, but at no point did he have to deal with urban renewal, which is because of the blight manufactured through redlining. Then we had these entire Black communities being demolished. And along with the blighted homes went the unblighted homes, the productive Black businesses, cultural institutions, but more importantly, the social ties that bound neighbors together and regulated the community were also lost in these massive upheavals and displacements. And Black people then had to go into a limited number of neighborhoods because of segregation. And now these neighborhoods were neighborhoods of strangers instead of neighborhoods that were tightly knit, right? And so these communities were now vulnerable to disorder, these neighborhoods of strangers. So Grandpa Bucci had a hard life, but at no point did he have to deal with blockbusting, which is when because of redlining, the very presence of Black people could reduce the property value. So these legal intermediaries would say, hey, once a Black person would move in, hey, white people, the Black people are coming, your property values are going to decline. White people would sell quickly at fire sale prices, and then these intermediaries would sell the homes to Black people at inflated prices, reaping morally dubious property. I can go on and on, but what I need you to see here is that there were layers and layers of racist policy. So at the end, Grandpa Bucci, his grandson, inherits his home in Livonia, which is a suburb of Detroit, and the home is worth over $300,000. He lives in the home today. Grandpa Brown's granddaughter, Myresha, inherits his home, which is worth less than $10,000. Why? Because of these layers and layers of racist policies. Yet the story that America tells is that Grandpa Bucci and his descendants have what they had because they worked hard. I'm here to tell you that Grandpa Brown worked hard too. But these racist policies have no shoulders on which to carry the blame. And so who gets the blame? The thing that's visible, the black people in the community. It's because of these narratives of personal irresponsibility. They're lazy, they're criminal, they're all of these, again, what I call narratives of personal irresponsibility, these layers and layers of racist policies get no blame.
Bernadette Atwahene is our guest. The name of the new book is Plundered: How Racist Policies Undermine Black Homeownership in America. We talked about redlining. I assume they don't use that phrase in Detroit or elsewhere. So what's the modern equivalent to that?
I mean, there is a modern form of redlining happening. So the historic form of redlining absolutely happened. But we're talking about property taxes, not redlining. Again, these are very distinct and different racist policies. But there is a modern form of redlining happening in Detroit, which is I have not yet spoken about, which is basically banks have an informal rule that they don't lend to homes worth under $50,000. But the majority of homes in Detroit sell for under $50,000, again, because of these layers and layers of racist policies. And so that means that in Detroit, the majority of homes exchange hands not through mortgages like in the rest of America, but through land contracts, which are seller financing that is much more risky and unfavorable. And again, it's a race-neutral rule. We're not making loans to homes under $50,000, but that race-neutral rule has a lot of racial consequences for African Americans in cities, not only like Detroit, but in many other cities where property values are low because of these layers and layers of racist policy.
You talk about this in the conclusion of the book, but where has that left black families? I mean, whites have left Detroit. Where have the black families gone?
So white people left Detroit a long time ago through white flight. And so what happens, one of the things you're talking about, the end of the book. So the book basically maps, we want to figure out what's going on. And in order to figure out what's going on, you have to follow the money. And so when we follow the money, what we find is that the biggest profiteer of property tax delinquency and foreclosure in Detroit is actually Wayne County. A lot of people think it would be the city of Detroit, right? Mm. Because, but it's not the city of Detroit. The city of Detroit is actually making a net loss through all of this, because once you foreclose on a home, the neighboring home's value decreases. You're no longer collecting property taxes on that home. Blight starts, et cetera. So Detroit, the city of Detroit is not the main profiteer, it's Wayne County. And a lot of people know is that Detroit went through the largest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history, but at that very, and it was subjected to an emergency manager, but at that same time, Wayne County was also going through a financial emergency. And the book reveals that Wayne County saved itself from emergency management and bankruptcy off the backs of delinquency and foreclosure in Detroit. So when you follow the money, you find that the county is the primary beneficiary. And it's important to understand that Wayne County has 43 municipalities. 33 have 70% or more of white people, and 3, Detroit, Inkster, and Highland Park, have a majority of black people. And when you look at the, in Wayne County, I did another study called Tax Out that shows that the majority black cities are experiencing these unconstitutional property tax assessments and property tax foreclosures at a far greater rate than the majority white cities. So this is racial injustice.
So we look at the long-term effects of these policies. So where are we now? If they come into the city now and they're starting their life together, or they're starting their life in the city.
Maybe this connects with your earlier question where you asked, where did the black people go? And maybe I always assume people know this, but Detroit is an 80% black city. Okay, so it's black people didn't go anywhere. They are in the city, and it's a majority black city. And so the point is that has this problem been solved yet? No, that is something that has not been solved, but there has been some movement forward. So what happened is when Mayor Duggan, which is the current mayor of Detroit, when he took office, as soon as he took office, he did two across-the-board cuts in property taxes. But I just told you that the lowest valued homes were taxed at a higher rate than the higher valued homes.
Right.
So what was needed was a deep decline in the lower valued homes and sometimes a raise in the higher valued homes. So when he did those two across the board cuts, it did help throughout the middle, but the lower valued homes are still being assessed in Detroit till this day. Study after study has shown this. University of Chicago Center for Municipal Finance and lots of other studies have shown that the lower valued homes till this day are still being overassessed. And so, but the problem is we haven't been able to move forward because Duggan wants to, he's running for the governor position. And so instead of acknowledging what study after study has said that these overassessments are still happening, he wants to declare that he has fixed the problem and there's no longer a problem, completely ignoring all of the empirical evidence. And so we're hopeful that we have a new mayor coming in January. And we're hopeful that under this new mayor, the new mayor has been working with us to find solutions to this problem. But as of now, you can't solve a problem if you don't acknowledge the problem exists. So that's been the problem under the Duggan administration. But now in January, with the new administration coming in, we're hopeful that we can acknowledge that the problem exists so that we can get to work on creating solutions. And we have, we is called the Coalition for Property Tax Justice, which is a coalition of over a dozen grassroots organizations in Detroit committed to three goals and three goals only. Number one is to stop these illegally inflated property taxes in Detroit and throughout the nation. Number two is to stop these foreclosures in Detroit until we can make sure that people are being foreclosed on for property taxes they actually owe. And number three is to win compensation. And so we've been working full time since 2017 trying to find answers. And we have what's called our first 100 days plan, where all of the learning and all of the empirical evidence we've been collecting, we have a plan that very clearly shows how the next administration can really clean up property tax injustice in Detroit in the first 100 days of the next administration. So we're very hopeful that the problem will in the next 100 days be resolved. But as of now, Joe, the problem still exists for the lowest valued homes.
The name of the book, Plundered, How Racist Policies Undermine Black Home Ownership in America. The book is published by Little Brown. Bernadette Atuahene, I thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to share this research with you.
Be well. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Again, the name of the book is Plundered. It is published by Little Brown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.